You are listening to Ismail Hassan. I am the founder and head teacher of Aikido of London. Welcome to the Aikido of London discussion series. Today's guest is with Stevie Boyle, head instructor of Aikido of Wishaw, and he'll be chatting about a couple of things here. The expectations he had when going to San Diego, where I also trained, of course, and following on from that, the teacher-student relationship. Hello, Stevie. Can you just, first of all, just introduce yourself a bit, let everybody know who you are, and then we'll get stuck into the discussion.
Hi, I'm Stevie Boyle, chief instructor, as Ismail said, at Aikido of Wishaw. I've been practicing Aikido for 30 years, and my initial teacher was a guy called George Girvin.
And a little bit about yourself as well, Stevie. Just, you know, what do you do, your background, not just your Aikido?
Oh, yeah, well, I've been a joiner since I left school. I've run my own business for a long time, managing to combine that with teaching Aikido and running a reasonably successful dojo and a reasonably successful business.
Sorry, go on.
No, that was it, really.
Yeah. That's a good question, isn't it? What were your expectations?
Well, my expectations were sort of based on my original experience with my teacher, a guy called George Girvin, who was a very martial teacher. And although the dojo in Cumbernauld wasn't particularly big, the standard of student was particularly high across the board. And my expectation really when I went to San Diego was that everybody there, because they had access to this world-class teacher, would be phenomenal. And that I would be quite low down the sort of pecking order when I got there. And sadly, that wasn't the case. When I got there, I found that, you know, although the numbers were much higher, the attendance, general class size was you know, maybe 60 people when I was there. You know, it was a fair chunk of people. But there was a percentage that were, they would never be any good. It didn't matter how much access they had to Chiba Sensei, they would never be any good. And then there was 90% sort of in the middle who were okay. And then there was a top 5% who were exceptional and would be exceptional wherever they went. So my initial expectation was kind of shot down in flames. You know, I was initially I was very disappointed, I think is the way to describe it.
What year was that when you went there?
That was 93.
And so you would have seen Chiba Sensei in England, I take it, by then.
Yeah, in fact, sorry, I tell a lie, it was 94. I'd seen Chiba Sensei every year, most years twice a year, because at that point he used to come here for summer camp and an autumn camp.
So you had some idea of what he was about, plus George himself would have filled you in with some of his, you know, his reputation and his authority. And the other thing is, were you aware of the Kenshusei program and the Uchideshi program and just you know how these things are structured, how it's all?
I was aware of the Kenshusei program because one of the other guys, the guy Alan McMurray, who'd taken over the dojo at Cumbernauld when George Girvin sadly died, had went to America and enrolled in the Kenshusei program and spent a significant period of time there. And Alan himself was very, very powerful Aikido, big man, but never used his size. He had really good technique, you know, Alan.
I remember Alan very well. He's a good guy as well.
Very quiet, very deep guy. Do you know what I mean? Difficult to engage in conversation, but his Aikido was fantastic, you know, and a fantastic teacher, but never wanted to be the centre of attraction.
Sounds like a smart guy.
Yeah, he certainly is. He certainly is. So he'd already been and done and joined the Kentry Save programme. So there was me and another guy both went at the same time, a guy, Jamie Jameson.
I remember Jamie as well. He was the, what's that battery called?
Duracell, Duracell Bunny.
He just never stopped.
Well, we kind of described him as more like a Tasmanian devil.
Well, I reserved that one for Jameson.
It's kind of like that. There was no off switch. And possibly the three of us, Jamie was probably the most, and I hate to use talented because people substitute talent for hard work, but Jamie was very talented, but he also did work exceptionally hard.
He was a busy bee as far as I can remember. Alan Going, how long did he go for?
Alan was there for 6 months because, the same as me, Alan had family back here, so that was a major commitment, you know. And
did I catch that right? 6 months.
6 months, aye.
And what? How much of the regime did he take on? Was he there for every class?
He was there every class. He done whatever it was, 27 hours a week, I think, at the time.
That sounds about right. And it's, five hours a day.
Aye, and he also took Gukemi for Chibasensi and a lot of the private classes because he was around all the time. You know, when Chibasensi used to teach classes to the sheriff's officers.
And he went alone or he went with Jamie?
No, he went alone. He went alone and initially.
And when he returned, what impression did he give you? How did he fill you in with the way things were?
Well, he never really said much. It like I said already, he wasn't much of a talker. It was more the physical demonstration, and he came back. He was good when he left to go, and when he returned, he was just much sharper, much cleaner, you know. Mm.
And much skinnier as well, I'm guessing.
I would say so. It was a bit leaner. I think me and Jamie were the only two guys to go to San Diego and put weight on.
Muscle. So would you say, I mean, if he didn't directly encourage you, would you say that just seeing how different he was and how much he'd progressed and whatever it was that was different and extra, you could say, that he had was enough to convince you that this is the way?
It was evident that he'd certainly changed. There was a major change in just his whole body, the way he carried himself. There was just something different, just something totally different about the way he carried himself. But initially the idea for me to go wasn't mine, the idea was Jamie's. You know, Jamie said he had to go and I went, well, okay, I'll come too. You know, I was a bit of an afterthought actually.
And you said you were disappointed, which is fully understandable. And before I get into sort of my side of it, having been there for many years, and seeing it on the inside, I guess it's firsthand. What was it in particular that were you expecting, like a dojo full of superstars, a dojo full of superb martial artists, high standards across the board? Is that what you thought you were going to see, or did you?
That's pretty much exactly what I thought I was going to see. That you know, everybody would be exceptional because they had access to this incredible teacher. And while there were people that attained that level, there were many, but just not everybody.
And what do you think it was? Why do you think that was?
I just think it's down to the individual. Do you know what I mean? There was also other guys that went to San Diego and for the same reason as me and joined the Kentry Save program, who for whatever reason didn't apply themselves, so they didn't really learn anything. So I kind of came to the conclusion that, you know, there are some people that will succeed despite their teacher and actually surpass their teacher. And there are other people that it doesn't matter who their teacher is, they'll never really learn anything. You know, so it's the individual that determines the teacher.
And as you say this, I take it you don't mean just the regular body of the membership there. You're also including the some of the enthusiasts and the Kenshusei and even the Ichidoshi. I'm guessing you're including everybody in your...
Yeah. I mean, when I arrived there, Mike Sidebottom had just left. But I met Mike Sidebottom on a few occasions afterwards, and Mike Sidebottom was exceptional, you know. Had a fantastic attitude. He had a really good outlook.
For the record, if I can explain, I was coming to the close of my training, myself and Yahya Solomon, and we were getting ready to leave. And just around the same time, a new batch of people had joined and were showing considerable aptitude and dedication. And Mike Sidebottom was one of them. It's an interesting story with Mike because Yahya and myself sort of played the good cop, bad cop sort of approach to it. I remember Mike would join us in the kitchen after the morning classes for chats. And I was sort of saying to him, like, what, you think you can make it? You think you can do it? I was kind of egging him on in many ways to the point of saying, well, I don't think you've got what it takes. And so he really didn't know what to say. And so he'd go off to Yahya. And he was in many ways more approachable than I was. And he'd chat to him. And then Yahya would be a case of, well, you know, he's telling you, in his own way, he's telling you, look, this is tough and it's serious. And have you really thought about it? And because it's not going to be a pushover. You're going to be challenged in ways that we haven't even thought about. And so he... took that on board, and well, the rest is history, because by then we had left and I never saw for several years the outcome. I saw it many years later, two or three years later, but in the world of Chiba-sensei and San Diego Aikikai, 2 or 3 years is a lifetime. And so when I saw him, he was night and day. He not only did he do it and stick with it, he really got it. And so you're quite fortunate. Not fortunate, because he'd left by then.
He'd left, but he visited, do you know what I mean? Seen him at, you know, President's Day seminars. And and when I used to return to America to go to Mike Flynn's dojo, and he showed up at seminars there. And you know, and quite a, not just a talented Aikidoka and hard working, just a really good guy.
Decent human being at the, yeah, at the end of it. What it's interesting what you're saying. What we're discussing really is, I suppose, is the question about the relationship. And, you know, the expectations were a world class teacher who's not only a world class martial artist and a world class teacher, and you don't always get the two together. So it would, logic would say, and I was not that different from you, Stevie, that You, if you're going to hang around this guy and you're going to take what he's doing on board with any kind of seriousness, you needn't be going there like 3, 4, 5 hours a day. Even if you go once a day for 2, 3 times a week, you should make considerable progress compared to anywhere else. And it wasn't the case, as we've established. And but more disturbing than I wouldn't say disturbing, this is the wrong term, I would say, as an observation, the regular ones, to some degree you could understand it. Maybe they're walking into something that they don't fully comprehend, and maybe they don't know how to go about things. And and when you've got a dojo of that size and of that kind of energy and throughput, the time has to be allocated to whoever wants to work at it, and then you do the best with everybody else. And but even then, if you work at it, you'll work your way through, and you work your way up, and you'll get more and more attention as sort of the attitude is, oh, you're still around. Oh, I guess you like it. Oh, I guess you want to learn it. You know the score. You just as the various little steps up the ladder are achieved, and then you start getting all thrown at you, and then it itself becomes an issue when suddenly the gates are open, and it's like, well, you're serious. You're making an effort, so I'm going to pour my knowledge and my experience and the energy into you. And some people freak out and end up actually going backwards rather than forwards, because they probably didn't quite realize what they were getting into that way. The observation being that there were many people who were Kinshuse and put a lot of time, a lot of energy, and I would say quite decent people. If you spoke to them off the mat as people, as a human being, but on the mat they and the overall training, they never quite got what was going on, and that it's that in a sense is the is a part of this chat, isn't it? It's like, what, why the hell did that happen? I mean, what's going on here? Why are you training so hard, and yet many years later, it hasn't shown, it hasn't revealed the quality and the standard that should be there. And it may well be that you've got guys and girls who went there and just did, you know, you could call them casual serious, and turned up and just were maybe a little bit more sincere or a little bit more grounded and did what they did. And many years later, it's little by little, step by step, they're doing all right. They've actually made some headway. They're not shouting about it. They're not they weren't Kenshusei, they weren't a Judeshi, and they did all right out of it. You see that in a lot of places, but it is it's food for thought. And it was, I'd like to throw something at you. My own impression when I was there, that there was always a number one, but there was never really a number two, not in reality. The argument being that prior to myself would have been someone like Juba, and there's Yahe, myself, and others that followed, that we are the second in command, if you want to have a hierarchy in the strict sense about it. But in reality, in practice, there was one and there's everybody else, even though Chibasense's own expectations of his seniors were still real. But in practice, the way everyone behaved towards each other, it was across the board that way. It's just that you trained harder and you did more. I don't know. What do you think? Would you say that's fair, or do you think I'm a little bit out of order there?
No. When I was there, it was quite competitive.
Like to get his attention, or
not for his attention, but it was like. I was a bit slow in the uptake. When we went there, the Kenshusei program was actually suspended for the summer, you know, because Chibasense used to give the Kenshusei that time off. So when we arrived...
Are you serious? How long was that for? Like 4 weeks, 6 weeks?
Something like that. The Kenshusei program used to shut down, you know, for that period, so as they could get a rest. So when we got there, we didn't realise this, and we asked if we could join the Kenshusei program, and he said, "Oh, it's suspended, but it's okay. We'll start it up again."
I bet you were popular.
Well, actually, with the Kenshusei, we were really popular because we were taking all the Ukemi, so they still got a rest. The classes were there, but me and Jamie were taking about 90% of the Ukemi for Chibasense, apart from weapons.
So they weren't in the direct line of fire.
No. So they were getting a break, and they were getting to see two other guys getting the shit kicked out of them, pardon the French. Mm. Right? Mm. So, but other guys, general members, they took exception to this.
What do you think it was? Did you see that in the way they related to Chibasense? Let's take the number one, let's take the head of the dojo. Do you sense that maybe they weren't open to him, or not open enough to him, and not open enough to the training that he was presenting there?
I don't know. I think I don't know whether it was envy or anger, because like the Kenshusei had all of a sudden been sidelined. And like I said, the Kenshusei, they couldn't care less. You know, Dave Alonso, Diane Deskin, Teru, they had no care because they weren't taking the Ukemi. But general members seemed to take this as a...
an insult, maybe?
Yeah, an insult on them. That who were these two guys coming in, and then all of a sudden they were getting all this attention.
That's a very negative reaction, though, isn't it?
Well, it wasn't in... I know you're absolutely aware of the term tag team.
Yes.
Well, people started tag teaming us, right? So they would go for Jamie when Jamie was taking Ukemi, and then they would go for me when I was taking Ukemi. Then you were tired, you know, because Chibasensi wasn't holding back. And most of the time when we were there, it was Koku. You know, he didn't teach a lot of technique when we were there. It was all Koku, Koku, Koku. And so it was very, very tiring. And again, it was Jamie that noticed that they're tagging us, you know. So we then picked on one guy a class, you know. And when Jamie took Ukemi for Chibasensi, I would get the guy, and vice versa. Then I would get the guy, and then they realised, oh, these guys are, you know, they're switched on, you know. So we weren't there to just
you. So that's 94. So I'm guessing you would have seen Shibata Sensei from Berkeley.
Oh, we've seen Shibata Sensei at President's Day and things like that. So, and Shibata Sensei's this is quite controversial, actually. This might not go down very well with some people. Shibata Sensei's Kenshi say were more switched on than Chiba Sensei's.
What do you think it was? Maybe more street savvy, maybe?
Possibly, and I think a lot of people just took the impression that because they were Chiba Sensei's Kenshi say, they were the cream.
going to an Ivy League or an Oxbridge university.
Yeah, perhaps.
The name rather than the actual... The work effort. But you're apart from being switched on, do you feel maybe the relationship between Shibata's sensei's students at that time and he was more robust, maybe more effective?
Chiba Sensei was obviously getting that bit older, and I think I seen Chiba Sensei at his best as a teacher when he was just, you know, because obviously you hit a peak as a martial artist, and your peak as a martial artist isn't the same as your peak as a teacher. And I think I got to see Chiba Sensei at his peak as a teacher, but just when he was starting to go downhill as a martial artist. And I don't mean that as an insult. That's just his teaching had just changed, whereas Shibata Sensei was still...
Well, you're talking about the inevitable aging process. Yeah. Plus the wear and tear and the injuries that he accumulated over the years.
Right, he still had the fire. The fire was still there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And if he wanted to rain that fire down upon you, there was not a thing that you could do about it. But it was more focused on the teaching. You know, then what is it people are always saying? So, you know, your form.
But if I interrupt you, Stevie, so do you feel that there was a lack of connection or a naiveness to what the training was? Because you've addressed the disappointment, which is you know, most people would understand that you're expecting a higher standard across the board. So instead, you got something else. And do you think some of that is? Are they going there because of the name? Are they going there because of the charisma, but not because of the love of training and maybe not open to what is coming across? I was discussing this part of this a different aspect of it with Yahya Solomon in Montana. You know Yahya well, of course, and a fellow Ichideshi, and in order to deal with Chiba Sensei's Ukemi, if we come to that part of it, to that part of the relationship, in order to be able to take Ukemi and deal with him, you can't second guess him. You can't anticipate. The only thing you can do is to be open, 100% open, and then you can feel it, and then you can. Then he makes it up, and you take it. From there, you do what you do from there. That becomes the deeper and the most real aspect of that training. But he also had relationships with people where it could be that the Aikido was not necessarily the strongest point in the relationship. That over tea, over dinner, over social time, that he connected with them in a different way. I don't know, because I only know the one that I had with him. But I think, in a way, words that are uttered, like teacher-student relationship, there's something else, isn't there? There's also chemistry, which really helps. If you don't have chemistry, it's a lot harder, I'm guessing. I suppose it depends on the nature of that chemistry, because sometimes chemistry can go the other way, can't it?
It can be toxic.
It can be toxic, exactly, and backfire. But if it works, and if it works for long enough, then there's the creative process is very strong there. But it doesn't have to be a full-blown chemistry in the sense that I'm conveying here. There's something, a respect, a connection. I like what you do. I mean, isn't that something, maybe you didn't say it. I think George Gorman actually said it to me. I'm confusing it. Chiba Sensei said it himself. One day George approached him and just, it was as brief as can be, because George was not exactly a conversation piece. No. He was a quiet man as well. And he apparently he just approached Chiba Sensei. It was, I think it was in a pub. After a session, seminars, in all likelihood, and just told him, "Look, I like what you do. I like the way you do things. I want to be your student." And Chiba Sensei said, "Okay, you're my student." it's like a samurai flick, you know. The recruitment process. But I thought it was magic. I thought it was. You don't have to travel around the world. You don't have to do what I did. You don't have to do what you did. A connection is a connection, and he's a guy who's doing his best, and probably above everything, he was honest about it. He was saying, "I like you, I like what you do, and I want to get something from you because I like you and I like it." And that was it. That was all that was needed, and the rest is whatever that became. And it obviously influenced him, and he got better, and he got to understand a little bit more than he would have before he made that comment to him, and Chiba Sensei accepted it. And as opposed to, say, someone who can be around him day in and day out, week after week, year after year. And I don't mean that this just necessarily with Chiba Sensei. It could be any teacher of any background, so-called style. There's only two styles. There's good Aikido and poor Aikido. There's the other stuff is inconsequential in my personal view, you find someone, and if there isn't some genuine part of you, an authenticity, and doing one's best, then nothing's going to happen. And you're either going through the motions, and that's not unusual, and it's not Aikido, it's not special. I think you'll see that in many walks of life. You turn up, you look like you're doing it, maybe you're getting a bit of a workout, which in itself is of some value. But you're not really getting it into your body. You're not really getting it into your mind. You're not really getting it into your spirit. And there is a lot of that, because as the years go by, you know, for a while that may be okay. But as the years go by, it's just a habit. You know, this is another subject that has been covered. Habits is a terminology thing. A habit implies a bad state of attitude. I don't mean like attitude as in I ain't gonna do that, I this is the way I do things and leave me alone. I mean attitudes of you approach it with the same way each time and you don't change it. Suppose it's Einstein, you know, you repeat it. What do they say? You repeat it, if you repeat it ad infinitum and expecting, and it didn't work first time, and you're expecting it to work the millionth time, it's stupidity in a sense. And let's face it, we do repeat a lot, but you try to repeat each one as though you've never done it before, which is a challenge. And maybe that quality wasn't there. I was gone by then, Stevie, so I didn't see that. But I saw plenty when I was there, and there are people there who were there because of there's a magnetism, isn't there? As you know, a powerful, charismatic brain, men and women do draw attention, and it's not necessarily the caliber of student that teacher necessarily wants. And so, how he felt about it would be a curiosity. I really don't know, but there's two aspects. One is business, isn't it? You're running a major institution, a major building with outgoings, and you've got a family and costs. So you've got to accommodate people and do your best with that as part one. So maybe someone that you may not have tolerated 10 years earlier or 20 years earlier, you're now accommodating as you've gone into the big league in terms of venue and the cost of running it. And the other side of it, which is very special, I think, and something he valued, is a Buddhist side. You open the door, you let anyone in, and that includes the Kenshusei program. And in that respect, you're trying to do some good. That maybe through this training, maybe with a minimal of contact, but it's not minimal. You're in that room, surrounded by that energy, which in itself should be enough if you're open to it. And it's that openness is maybe that's key. What would you say? Would you say the openness is an authenticity, and the authenticity covers a lot. That you're authentic in your desire to learn. That you're willing to go through the rough as well as the smooth, and you're genuine towards what you're doing. I would say that's a pretty good one. And it reminds me, if I can just add a little bit more. Do you remember it's a story I loved. Do you remember, you watched the Godfather films, I take it, Stevie. Do you remember the third one, made many years after the first two? The one that's obviously nowhere near as good as those. And it's got Al Pacino, he's still the Godfather, and he's in Rome, and he's trying to go legit. And so we're talking about spirit, and I hope this is not too much of a diversion, but there's a scene where he's talking to the cardinal. He's in a pickle. He doesn't quite know what's going to happen next or what he's going to do next. He's trying to go legit, and things are going wrong. And he's done evil. He's murdered his brother. And he's chatting to the cardinal and saying, in a way, he's asking, what is it all about? And he's asking a religious man at that. So that's very revealing. And the cardinal pointed him at the fountain beside them, this small fountain, and what looked like a bush. I don't know what exactly it was, these nuts that were falling in there. They looked like walnuts, but he stuck his hand in there and pulled one of them out, and he cracked it open. And he was trying to make I remembered it because I think it really struck a chord. He was saying that if we take the spirit of God, and I'm not a religious man, and I don't think you are either, but... The idea of spirit, the idea of a universal force, a divine. The idea of energy that is around, and it, being in Rome, he was talking about Jesus in the Catholic faith here, and so he's talking about spirit that comes from that. He opens. He says we've been surrounded by it for 2,000 years nearly, and he opens the walnut, and it's dry. And the spirit hasn't entered it. In other words, the water hadn't gone in from that. And if you take that as a metaphor, not literally and not on a religious basis, us human beings, when we engage, when we meet other people, when we deal with things, energy is not just your body. It's not just your intellect. But there's also the essence of that human being behind it. And that's the part that really will learn. That's the part that you've got to trigger and try and get something of it. And if you're not open, you stay, I don't know, you're not stimulated, it stays dry, you're not challenging yourself in any way. And maybe if you're closed as a personality, you can't respond to that kind of training. And the outcome is that you run out of steam. You don't have enough material absorbed. Which is what you're learning, plus finding out what's already in your body. You already have a lot of the tools, but you've got to be open at least to yourself, if not beyond that. Have I stretched this a little
too far? No, because it's possibly, maybe I could sum it up a wee bit quicker, but a lot of the people, I think when they got there, they realised that what they wanted or what they were going to get was a lot more intense than what they wanted, and they backed off.
Got scared, maybe.
Maybe, you know what I mean? I had a different outlook on Chiba Sensei, and by this time. But, and that was that if he wanted to damage me, then nothing I could do was going to stop him. So I might as well just relax and do the best. And I also had a kind of, you know, maybe the Celtic background I've got is like, every time I attacked him, I tried to hurt him. Do you know what I mean? It was like, yeah. Any time I attacked him, I never held back, you know. And that's the way I trained with George. I was, you know, you had to be physical, you had to be committed, you know. And maybe some people...
But you were also, but back to my point, you were also... You are open to him. You are open to the teaching and the human being as well that was in front of you. So the physical aspect, yes, you were going for him, but it takes, you need your spirit, you need your energy to do that. And what came back to you, you had to be open to that. You weren't resisting it or challenging it, or he wouldn't have bothered, especially as you already established, as you're getting older. If someone's being difficult, it's probably not easy for you anymore. It's that you don't want to dish it out in the way that you used to. And so you're hoping for a bit more sensitivity from the
other side. I think that committed attack, you know, the committed attack was easy for him.
Yes.
I think somebody that came in and attacked him with commitment, then it was easy for him in his Aikido to respond to it. But it's the crazy thing about the, you know, going back to that teacher-student thing, is initially the teacher has no input into the student because the student makes the choice.
It's mutual. It's
yeah,
mutual.
But initially, you know, the teacher doesn't pick the student picks the teacher. And then the teacher has input into it, you know. So these people went there choosing to enroll in Chiba Sensei's school, and then perhaps, I can't, not everybody, because there was guys, and when I was there, there was one young kid in particular, Leon, who kind of eyed me up across the mat for about a week before we managed to get together, and he was fantastic, but he didn't have the time to commit to the Kenshisei program, you know, because he worked, he had to support his family. And but people, the student initially makes that choice, and then the teacher can choose to accept them or no, because you've done it, you know, you've refused students, I've refused students, you know, and I'm quite sure Chiba Sensei has as well, but initially that contact is initiated by the student.
I think for a lot of people, you kind of hinted at it, it was the idea of it and the reality of it didn't match. It's the idea of being a Kenshusei, for example, your is an indication of dedication. This is my life path. It's a kind of a romantic notion, whereas the daily thing is got its ups and downs. Grind. There's a grind sometimes. Sometimes you've got to just ride it and hang in there. And other times it's incredible, it's inspirational and fantastic, and overall, you know, it's dedication, a little bit of pigheadedness, maybe a lot of pigheadedness, but you've got to be open. I think it's
a timing thing as well. If I'd have went there 10 years earlier, I don't think I would have survived. Yeah. You know, because of my physical and my mental makeup, I don't think I would survive. I think when I went, it was the perfect time for me. So I was extremely receptive to anything I could get, you know.
It's an incredible, it's another reality that the time and place of where you are in your life and where he is in his life, or any other teacher, that you, there's a window, isn't there? And that's part of it. Could have been that you wouldn't have been opened to that kind of training, or you wouldn't have made it.
Well, I was quite old when I went. You know, most people that went were the late teens, early 20s. I was early 30s. I was early 30s. So compared to most guys there, I was an old guy. You know,
And if you take that, and that was your San Diego experience, and that was brief, but if you take that and to other places where there are other dojos, okay, it's not quite on that caliber or level, but do you feel that it's similar, that there are people that may be training with a decent teacher and not making the headway that they should be? I mean, do you feel that yourself? Have you experienced
Yeah,
that?
Hulk, the thing you remember about Chiba Sensei is he was exceptional both as a martial artist and a teacher. There are lots of other people out there who are fantastic martial artists, but they're absolutely terrible teachers. You know, that they're incapable of transmitting the information that they want to transmit, but themselves they're very, very good martial artists, but they're very, very poor teachers. And that's no me being disrespectful. It's just a fact. You know, just because you're technically good at something doesn't mean to say you're good at transmitting it.
Well, you know that in sports, don't you? I mean, you're a big
Yeah.
football
Yeah.
enthusiast, and you know that some of the best coaches were not the best
No.
players. It does happen. You do there is who's it? Johan Cruyff, for example, the Dutch player, excelled both as a manager and as a player. But that's unusual. Usually, they're quite average by
Well,
all accounts. So.
my team Celtic, their most famous manager, Jock Stein, was a bang average player. Do you know what I mean? He was no great shakes as a player, but he was a fantastic tactician and a fantastic man manager. So it sometimes translates as well that somebody who's not the best martial artist is a really good teacher because they have to, what would you say, they have to study more to attain a level.
So what would you say the other side of it then? So you can become to be a great coach or a manager, as you just said. But what about the other side, the player side? What would you say is the qualities you would look for in a student then, that gives them that chance to progress, to make that headway in whatever their capacity allows? What do you look out
For
for?
me, it's
What do you
just
value?
determination. Determination. It sounds crazy that, you know, I was going to say I don't mind, but I do mind if a student doesn't get it. But I really do mind if they stop trying to get it.
If you give
If
up, in
a
other
student
words.
keeps on trying, then I'll keep on trying to teach them. The minute they stop trying, then there's no point in me continuing to try because I can't have any influence on them at that point.
And would there be a point of someone who's doing their best, but they've reached a limit? Is there a point where you will just stop and say, "Look, I like you. I'm very fond of you, in fact, think you're a great guy, you've been around for a while, and look, just enjoy yourself. But do you abandon them yourself? Do
No,
you give
I've
up?"
never gave up on a student in my life.
And it's Dito. I've never done that. There's certainly you've met my crew, and certainly the range of ability and experience is very large, and it's a learning curve. Everybody's got to learn, and everyone's got to get
And
something out of it
everybody learns at a
for
different rate, you know. And that's the
yeah,
great thing about going
completely.
on seminars because I could tell my students something for ages and then you say it just a little bit different, you know, or you come at it from a different perspective and then the student realizes what it is somebody's been trying to say to them for ages. But going back to the other point,
And
I think once you give up on a student, it then becomes easier to give up on the next one and the next one and then before, you know, you're only interested in that top 5%. And again, going back to my experience with George Gervin, it's a very, very tough dojo. Ukemi wasn't a thing that was taught. You either survived or you didn't. But it was always inclusive. Nobody was ever told you can't train or you're no welcome, you know. And obviously there are students who will never progress regardless or whatever, but I think the first time you say no, it becomes easier to say no more and more often.
That's a very good and very important point, I think. So it's from the teacher's side, you just got to stick with your regime. You have to have the faith in it that you've always shown. But just a last point. When you got back and you were back in Scotland, I was going to say England, you're back in Scotland, and you've gone through training, you've been given good attention, he took you seriously. You did your hours and the quality of the training as well, but you also had your share of disappointment from what you've just mentioned. When you got back and you were getting back into your regular training regime in Scotland, did that disappointment stay with you, or did it leave a mark on you, or did you just
no? It left a mark, but the mark was one that it doesn't matter about anybody else. I can only try and achieve for me. So, you know, what another student does on a seminar, or what another student does as a Kensh, you say, or how much they achieve, or how much they want to achieve. Because obviously there were other students there who achieved a lot more than I did, you know.
So it's up to you, but your original point is up to the student. You have to show that initial... I want to do this. I don't want to waste my time here.
I train because I wanted to train. I went to San Diego, yeah. Although the initial idea wasn't mine. I went because I wanted to go. And I worked hard because I wanted to work hard, not because somebody else wanted me to work hard. So, and what I've realised over the years is that I can't be as good as Ismail Hassan. I can't be as good as Yahi Solomon or Juba Noor. I can only be as good as I can be because I have a different mindset, I have a different upbringing, different background, very working class, hard, central Scotland upbringing. So, my mental outlook is probably mellower now than it was then, but very, like maybe working class in, the docks in London or Liverpool, kind of tough.
Yeah. Everybody, we all bring something different to it. That's such a revealing thing there that you're bringing up. I mean, two things really, isn't it? One, really, back to this authenticity thing, is like you just take care of your own training. You're not responsible for anybody else's. As a student, as a teacher, you do your best and try to encourage people. But in the end, it's up to the student as well if they're going to take that on board and do anything with it. And like you said, getting it wrong is not the issue. It's of course you want people to get it right, but getting it wrong and not being bothered, well, that's a different game. And the second part is the what you bring to it. So many conversations and articles over years and years is like what I get out of Aikido, what I get out of any kind of training, and oh, I'm fitter, or I'm so much more reasonable or versatile, or I can handle this, that, and the other, and the list goes on, and which is great, and it is, you do it for that, but you're also, what are you bringing to it? What qualities are you bringing to it? The art itself, the teacher and the dojo needs good qualities from the student, and that feeds back into it and enhances it. So it works. It's a two-way traffic rather than I paid my fee, grabbed my bit and gone off, which is a little bit linear and a little bit limiting. You'll only get so far ultimately, and it's really not in the spirit of the training. I mean, let's face it, where else can you go where you got, I don't want to sound again disrespectful, but you've got a housewife who started in her 40s and is got the character, has got the spirit, but, the body's not quite as tough and conditioned and athletic as someone who's younger and male or female. And you've got someone who's actually a superb athlete but loves martial art, doesn't want to go into athletics. And you're on the same mat, and the two of you, you have to deal with each other. There's Aikido is exclusive in the sense that it's a very high quality training system, but it's not exclusive in the sense that I will only allow this level and that level. It doesn't work that way. And there's a beauty in that, and it's also probably where it's weakest in the sense that if it was boxing, you know, you soon find out quickly who the fighters are and who've got the boxing skills, and you kind of put them to one side and you cultivate them separately, and the rest just carry on doing what they can for health and fitness purpose. In Aikido, we mingle, and I learn from you and you learn from me, regardless of abilities and qualities. And I think for Stevie Boyle to be as good as he can, and for Ismail Hassan to be as good as he can, and Joe Bloggs to be as good as he can, is the achievement is the same. In other words, the path you've got to walk to get there is no more no easier than it is for anybody else. I think that says a lot, you know, to fulfill your potential as much as you can. We never get there in the end. We get old and we move on to another pasture, sounding very Gandalf now. But I don't mean it quite that way. We get old and we've got a set amount of time to do that. And I think we have to bear that in mind, that's probably another part of it, isn't it? That time is limited. The window is open only for so much time, and you've got to make the best of that while you can, which means you've got to sense it. You've got to see if there's an opportunity there and take advantage of it if you can.
There's one other thing before you go on. It's the relationships you make as well, because in the normal scheme of things, Ismail, me and you would never have encountered one another.
I was chatting about that earlier and today, in fact. No, we wouldn't have. But had we done, there is no reason to say that we wouldn't have become friends.
It's because of one connection, you make another connection. You know, because I had that connection with you, I then came to London to see Juba. I then had a connection with him and through other people, you know, I made a really good connection with Mike Flynn, and then through Mike Flynn, my connection with Shibata Sensei became really, really quite strong. You know, so you make these connections, and although you don't see these people, you know, for such a long time, the connection is always there.
Yeah. That's definitely the case. But you were, and I know I'm rubbing this in, but you were open to all that. It's your nature. And I think it's a very important quality to have. I think it was Chiba Sensei. He was asked about that. You know, what do you look out for? And he said, authenticity. It's very old Japanese culture. Authenticity is to be genuine, isn't it? Be genuine in what you do. Don't be fake. Don't be false. And then you've got a pretty good chance at getting somewhere. I think on that note, let's end our chat. I think we've covered quite a bit. Like all these chats, we always find out there's so much more to say, and there's certain things that have been said that will be an entire
just open up conversations for you with other people.
Yeah, precisely, and I think we've done a pretty good justice here. I think we've covered it well, and thanks for joining me, Stevie, and look forward to seeing you physically, of course, when eventually we all can move around a bit.
Always a pleasure, Ismail. Always a pleasure. Bye.